This is the Venturing Angler Podcast. I'm Tim Harden. In this episode, sponsored by Sightline Provisions, we're chatting with Matt Herron about fly fishing in the Sierras around Truckee, California. Let's chat with Matt. So Matt, welcome. You're a guide based out of Truckee, California. For those who aren't familiar, where's Truckee?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. First of all, I really appreciate it, Tim. This is going to be a fun chat for sure. But for those of you that aren't familiar with Truckee, California, the closest city to us would be Reno, even though that's on the Nevada side. Our business is based on the California side. But yeah, we're on the north shore of Lake Tahoe and, about an hour and a half from Sacramento and maybe 3 hours from San Francisco. So we're up in the mountains at about 6,000 feet and it's a pretty special place, that's for sure. So
that's great. What waters are in your area?
Yeah, so we specialize on the Truckee and Little Truckee. The Truckee is kind of your classic Western freestone. Even though a lot of the water in it is dam controlled, it doesn't fish like your classic tailwater. It is more of a freestone. You know, the flows are very controlled by Mother Nature. But, you know, a lot of anything from slow riffles to fast bouldery pocket water down in the canyon. The Little Truckee, however, is our kind of famous tailwater in our backyard. It's only about 3.5 miles long. It fishes more like a spring creek than it does a true tailwater. Very slow, low gradient, very clear water, you know, big fish, but exact presentation, small tippet, small flies. But that's kind of our claim to fame. But between my wife and I, who runs the other half of the business, we book anglers all over the place. Pyramid Lake, the Nevada side of the Truckee, the Carson. We run a bunch of smallmouth bass trips. But, you know, our home base is the Truckee and Little Truckee. So,
and Truckee's, you know, a pretty cool, like, iconic Western mountain town.
Yeah.
At high altitude, it's got some of the best skiing in the world. Squaw Valley is what, like 10 minutes from Truckee?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, 10, 15, exactly. Yep.
You guys get a lot of, there's great scenery and also, you know, obviously good snow. So with respect to the, since the snow's coming up now, usually I bring up seasons later, but is it a pretty seasonal river? I know it's a tailwater.
You know, well, so the Little Truckee is a tailwater. The Truckee is a freestone, but typically on a normal year, it fishes really well year round. Because it's a freestone, don't get me wrong, in August can be kind of a grind. Water temps get warm. There's less bugs. You know, it's low and gin clear. You know, if you like to sight fish, it can be one of the few times a year you can sight fish the Truckee. But typically it's not seasonal. It is a very good year round fishery. Winter fishing, as you mentioned, with the ski industry, we get a ton of snow here. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case this year, which we can kind of get into the drought conditions at some point during the interview here. But typically it fishes really well year round. We love fishing in the winter. The fish tend to be bigger, but less numerous, less people. If you can deal with, you know, high 30s water temps and snow, it can be an amazing place to get out in the winter. But like any fishery, we love the spring and the fall. We love early summer. That's when our bugs really start to pop, which is what's happening right now. But and then the Little Truckee, which is of course dam released, that one is definitely not seasonal. It fishes well year round, very stable water conditions, very stable water temperatures, bugs year round. Because it's only 3.5 miles long, it has very easy access. So the negative with the Little Truckee is it absolutely gets hammered with people. It can get really busy over there. You can't really like escape the crowds, quote unquote.
Yeah, it strikes me, and maybe I've had weird days, that the Little Truckee and the Truckee are extremely close to each other, obviously, but also very, very different waters. I think one day I just got completely schooled on the Little Truckee and then went over to the Truckee and caught like 8 trout in a very short amount of time.
There you go, right?
is that normal there?
I would say, there's a few, it's a hard thing to answer. So I would say that can be normal. Most people, truthfully, so the joke is the nickname of the Truckee is the Toughy or the Tricky, depending on who you talk to. Many people consider one of the most challenging freestone rivers in the country. I mean, people can work their butts off for fish. The same goes for the Little Truckee. You know, it's all about presentation and where those fish are. We see a lot of people that are fishing water, you know, that don't even have fish in it. It's like, it's shallow and clear. Like, just look where you're casting. Like, there's no fish there. Right. Obviously you're not a normal tourist that comes up here. You've been fishing forever. You know the deal. But sometimes the rivers just flip like a switch. One will fish really well and one will fish really tough. You know, I would say most people avoid the little truckie because they kind of get their butts kicked a little bit more over there than the truckie. So I would kind of say what happened to you can be the norm depending on conditions and, you know, bugs and all that kind of stuff. So, but to hear you caught 8 in a short amount of time on the truckie, like, that's the real deal. That's legit. Well, so you were on them. That was the river was firing for sure.
The next morning I caught 0.
There's the truckie for you. Exactly.
The little truckie has got reservoirs on each end of it, correct?
Correct. So assuming we're talking about the middle section of the little truckie, which we are, sometimes it actually gets confused with the lower section. There's actually 3 parts to the little truckie. There's what's considered the upper that flows into Stampede, which is the upper reservoir you just mentioned. Then there's the famous section, which on paper, like if you look at a map, it's actually the middle section. That's the famous tailwater section that's like 3.5 miles long, give or take. That flows into Boca Reservoir. And then on paper, there's actually the lower little truckie, which is like this little mini section that comes out of Boca and flows into the truckie. Even though on paper that's a tailwater, it's very inconsistent flows up, down. It can get so shallow, the water temps can actually get really high, which is what we're running into currently. But typically when you hear people say, oh, I fished the lower section of the little truckie, on the map, it's not really the lower, but commonly within fishing circles, the lower section is the famous 3-mile kind of tailwater section with, you know, a bunch of wild fish and good hatches, that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's wedged between 2 reservoirs. The upper one is Stampede, which is absolutely huge, at least for truckie reservoir standards. It's not like Folsom or anything. Some of the huge, you know, Shasta, whatever. And then below it is Boca Reservoir, which is quite a bit smaller. So
what are some of these big hatches and events that you look forward to throughout the year?
Yeah. So right now, who knows when people are going to listen to this, but we're looking at, you know, mid-June on paper. With the drought, things are a little early this year. So we're actually looking at like early July conditions. So for both rivers, to keep it simple, our green drakes are just getting going. We love those. Our huge mayflies. It's the biggest mayfly we have in the area. All different sizes of caddis, tan and olive, anything from like big 14s, 16s are the norms. There's some micro caddis around that are really tiny. Our PMDs are firing. That's kind of our size 16. Depending on where you are, the color can kind of change from like a pinkish to a creamsicle to almost a yellow. So you kind of have to have 3 colors on you if you're fishing dries anyway. Our yellow sallies are firing. We've seen a few golden stones. We haven't seen any nocturnal stones yet. Obviously there's kind of midges year round. That's not really a seasonally specific bug. What am I missing? Non-bug wise, Truckee's world famous for its crayfish. So we fished a lot of crayfish patterns kind of from May through the fall. You don't see too many around in the winter. And then, you know, your terrestrials, ants, beetles, grasshoppers. It has been insanely windy the first 2 weeks of June. So the terrestrial kind of thing has been a little bit better than usual for this time of year because those poor bugs have no chance with the ripping wind we've been having. They're just getting blown into the river constantly. So, yeah, it's a good time of year for bugs to hatch is right now.
Wow. How big are, you mentioned size of these fish, how big are some of the fish that are in these waters?
Yeah. So great question. So any other time of the year, the truckee is known for size and not numbers. The easiest way to explain it, and of course it's fishing, right? There's exceptions to every rule and everything we say. But most people you talk to, when you hear the truckee, you think size, not numbers. Like we don't catch a ton of fish, but the potential for like that fish of a lifetime is there. About every year and a half, you know, 30-inch fish comes out of the river. I think last spring, a fish that was like 32, 33 came out of the river. So we're talking like world-class fish. And a lot of them are getting big on like sculpin, other trout, crayfish. You know, a 30-inch fish is not eating midges all day, you know? But in the summer, which on cue, just like it should this year, a couple weeks ago, all of the 1 and 2 year old rainbows and a few browns kind of came out of the woodworks. So it's nice to like run from a client standpoint to run into a little bit better numbers. You know, we are catching tons of like 5 to 13 inch fish, which a month ago, we did not see those fish at all. It was only adults, you know, 13 to 20 inches. But it's pretty wild, you know, that flip switches in the summer. And I don't know if those small fish just get comfortable moving into like normal feeding lanes, and there's a ton of them. So, you know, it just shows the Truckee's really healthy. Those fish, you know, in a couple of years are going to be nice quality 15 to 18 inch fish, you know? So, there's kind of a wide range, but the potential for that fish of a lifetime is certainly available on the Truckee, but, you got to put your time in.
Yeah. One of the things, that I've noticed about the Truckee, especially, you know, in the midwinter and stuff, is it can get pretty low. Are these fish fairly, I don't want to use the word migratory, but are they pretty much on the move trying to find good water throughout the year?
That's a great question. And I'm, without being a biologist that's studied the Truckee, all of my studies, quote unquote, are, you know, unofficial, you know, just being out there every day. But we think that Truckee browns and rainbows are similar here to other places, in the sense that the rainbows are constantly on the move. They're moving upstream and downstream, and we're assuming non-spawning time, right? Where then they're on a mission to move. But throughout most of the year, the rainbows move quite a bit, from what we can tell, up downstream. You know, in the summer, they're maybe looking for cold creeks dumping in. In the winter, they're moving to deep, you know, slow pools to conserve energy. Pretty typical normal trout stuff anywhere you go. And then the browns, we think, they kind of have their little section of river where they stay, and those are their spots, you know. We have spots where we run into more adult browns than others. You know, a lot of spots we run into, and we tell clients like, hey, we haven't caught a brown out of here in a year. This is kind of a rainbow spot, you know. And a lot of that mindset has been confirmed to some extent. When you literally cross the border, there's a dam that blocks fish passage. And on the Nevada side, Endow, our buddy Travis Hawks, has actually done a lot of really good scientific work over there regarding, you know, where these fish are moving. Are they moving? And his studies show, which basically is the same river, right? Like the dam doesn't change the genetics of a fish. That's maybe a whole nother topic in and of itself. But anyway, he's finding that the rainbows move, and he's finding when they electroshock the river that some of these browns, they are electroshocking underneath the same rock every freaking year, but the fish is a little bit bigger. So, and that's not the only place that's happening. That, you know, those findings happen in other places, not just the Nevada side of the Truckee. So, you know, again, I'm not a biologist, I'm not a scientist that's actually studying this, but we do think the browns kind of hold in their spot and the rainbows move. So that's a very long way of answering your question.
No, that's interesting. And actually I was driving on 80 2 weeks ago, and I saw a number of people fishing the Nevada side, and it occurred to me that I've never fished the Nevada side. Is it?
Oh, no way.
Is it different? I mean, it's obviously lower elevation.
So I guess is it different? Yes. In the sense that, their water temps are a little warmer for obvious reasons, less water and lower elevation, more desert conditions, or maybe high desert. Their water's a little more, bit more off color. So you can actually get away with, heavier tippet. You know, it's rare on the Nevada side that you're like sight fishing. Our water on the California side is gin clear almost all year. They have, if you get east, we kind of, you know, the way the Nevada side is split up verbally within the fishing community is, oh, were you fishing like, from Reno to California, or were you fishing east of town, as we call it? And the farther east you go, you run into a little bit dirtier water. We run into a little bit more frog water. And those browns, some of those biggest browns on the Nevada side can be found east of town. Don't get me wrong, there's totally exceptions. There's some huge browns in downtown Reno. But the percentage of browns caught is probably quite a bit higher on the Nevada side than the California side. They just love that little bit warmer water, a little bit froggy, a little bit slower. So technically you could say it's different. The Nevada side, from a fish standpoint, also gets stocked heavily with very small Lahontan cutthroat. So you can run into a run and catch like 30, you know, 9-inch cutties out of there. To my knowledge, all the browns and rainbows are wild. The only stocking program is the cutties. And then way on the lower river, you might run into some of those huge pyramid lake fish coming up from Pyramid. So you could run into a 5 to 30 pound cutty, which, you know, there's a new fish ladder in place right now where there's some politics going on with that being open and or closed for a number of different reasons. That might be a topic for another podcast. But depending on where you are, eventually when you get close enough to Pyramid, you're not allowed to fish it. But most of the river is all open to the public down there, and you could catch anything from a 10-inch rainbow to a 20-pound lawn cutthroat if you get far enough downstream. So
that's wild.
Yeah.
And for those who aren't familiar, since we're talking about two different states, about how far is Reno from Truckee?
So great question. So from downtown Truckee to downtown Reno, depending on traffic, which usually isn't traffic, what most people have in their head. We're pretty lucky around here. I'm going to generically say 20, maybe 25 minutes. So
pretty close.
Yeah. The Nevada border fishing wise from downtown Truckee is maybe 15 minutes. So, and that's where that whole stretch entering Nevada, is what we call the canyon stretch. You know, fast, bouldery pocket water. There's some nice, smooth, calm runs and stuff like that. But, you know, from, again, a fishing, you know, a verbal standpoint, how we communicate with other anglers, we call that stretch the canyon. So
that's a good way to put it. And it does, yep. A lot of it, even on the Little Truckee, when you first go into it, does seem like you're in a canyon. And that's a nice part of the landscape.
Yeah, for sure. The Little Truckee is super unique. You know, you pass the lake and then the inlet, and then you get into the mini canyon where there's, you know, small canyon walls on each side of you. And then you get to the meadow stretch, and then it goes up to the dam. So yeah, it's like three different parts to the Little Truckee. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the canyon could be like Cheeseman Canyon in Colorado. And then the meadow stretch is almost like, you know, you described it like a spring creek. It's similar in the way people approach it to like the Henry's Fork even, where it's like this, you know, it's kind of flat, even though you're at altitude and everyone's sort of plotting their moves.
Yeah, for sure.
And as far as gear goes, because I'm sure you guys get a lot of people who are just passing through or might be on a family trip, who aren't, you know, fishing these rivers routinely. What gear do you recommend?
Yeah. So great question. You kind of hit the nail on the head. We even, you know, as much as like you and I and the fishing community consider Truckee like a hub of trout fishing, like in the big grand scheme of things, we are by far a tourist destination first. And you hit the nail on the head. Like people come here and they're like, Matt, hey, we want to golf one morning. We want to go to the lake one morning. We want to go skiing one morning. We want to fish one morning. So like usually fishing isn't like the first thing, it's one of many things. So because of that, we deal with a very beginner friendly demographic here, right? A lot of families, a lot of tourists that, you know, are trying fly fishing for the first time. So with the gear that we typically provide, or at least me, we have a huge crew of awesome guides that, you know, everyone has their own routine, just like anywhere. But my big thing is, you know, the classic 9 foot five weight around here, which is sold, you know, by most fly shops around the country. On the Truckee, I prefer that to be kind of only a dry fly rod. Whether you're throwing, you know, green drakes, like a big mayfly, or like little size 20 BWOs or betas, whatever. And then if we kind of stick with the dry fly thing, you go up a step. We do a lot of hopper droppers and hopper droppers sometimes with like two tungsten beads. In that instance, if that's like part of your game and what you like to do, I'm a big fan of 10-foot rods, like a 10-foot four weight. Can handle a huge bushy hopper, or maybe a chubby Chernobyl or something like that with two tungsten beads. You're going to have a lot more fun and ease of casting with a longer rod when you're throwing those really heavy dry fly rods. And truthfully, at that point, you're almost nymphing if you're throwing two heavy tungsten beads under a hopper, right? But from a nymphing standpoint, if you're throwing indicators and bobbers, I am a huge fan of not throwing your typical 9-foot five weight. You're going to have such an easier more pleasant day of fishing if you're fishing a 9.5 or even a 10-foot rod with an indicator. You pair that with an indicator line, and it makes lobbing what I call a junk rig. Indicator, multiple split shot, multiple flies. It just makes it so much easier. Parts of the truck here are pretty wide. Most of our clients can't even come close to the middle, let alone the far side. If you can add a foot to your rod and an indicator fish with a 10 footer instead of a 9, you'll be in a better position to hook a couple extra fish a day. And don't get me wrong. I know everyone, half the tourists in town that are out there fishing on their own, they're all throwing 9 foot five weights, which is totally fine. But, you know, from a guide standpoint, I'm putting what I feel is the perfect tool in somebody's hands. And, you know, our nymphing rods are 10 feet. And then I guess to go a step further, the Truckee's famous for its kind of tight line Euro check nymphing applications. And I'm a big fan of 10.5 foot three weights for all of our tight lining, which we do every day. We're throwing 10.5 foot three weights. So obviously within all those options, you can go down a lot of rabbit holes depending on what people want to bring up here. So.
And that's great. One of the things that's been coming up a bit is, and I just can't stop thinking about it because it's emerging as a crisis, but water.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the drought and maybe even look at it a little bit historically, because, you know, there's been some real ups and downs over the last, 10 years up there. I mean, longer than absolutely. That, but especially in the last 10 years, you know, what's the history there? What's happening right now? And how are things looking?
For sure. So a little, background. So I moved here in 06. So that's how long I've been here, 15, 16 years, whatever the math is, depending on the date. But so we have seen a lot of ups and downs. So it's kind of been the joke is like, what is the new normal? Like none of us really know, right? When I moved here, not only did we get a ton of snow in the winter, we would get pretty good rainstorms. Nothing crazy. It's still dry here, but we would get rainstorms quasi consistently throughout the summer. Now, 15, 16 years in, we never know how much snow we're going to get. We get virtually no rainstorms in the summer. They're non-existent, which is a bummer. But here's what we're looking at currently. So, let me compare it to the last mega drought that California had. It was going backwards. 16 was the worst year. 15 was really bad. 14 was kind of 50% snowpack. And then I'm a year off. 13 was kind of, hey, we didn't get much snow this year compared to normal, but we're still looking good. So the reason I bring up that 4 year span of the drought, the last 2 years were the worst. 15 was the first year in my years living here where Lake Tahoe dropped below the natural rim. When Tahoe drops below the natural rim, there's no water entering the Truckee River from Tahoe. The dam, it's known as Fanny Bridge, which is actually the bridge, but that's the dam in Tahoe City, which is one of the most inefficient dams in the country. The way it was explained to me is it's only 6 feet deep, but it only draws 3 feet of water. So you're looking at the 11th deepest lake in the world, and it only draws the top 3 feet of water from it. So it is a very inefficient, outdated dam from, I'm not going to pretend to know what year it was built, 100 years ago, right? Actually, more than that. It's more than 100 years old. So that's where we start running into issues from a fishery standpoint, water temperature standpoint. So we are only drawing the top 3 feet of the warmest water off of Lake Tahoe. What we are running into this year, looking back at those drought years, is we are now, even though last winter was not great from a snow standpoint, we weren't like freaking out that it was a drought. This year, it's like, okay, this is year one of the drought. Why in the freaking world is Tahoe dropping below its natural rim when last time it took 3 years for that to happen, right? So, you know, I'm not going to get into politics of like water management and usage and mismanagement. I mean, that's a whole nother deal. But, you know, what we're running into now because of whatever the management was is we will have a quote unquote hoot owl closure this year. All of our bookings in August, my wife has been telling everyone like, hey, we're going to fish you, but it probably won't be on the Truckee. We're fully expecting the river to be completely closed then. And we can get into the hoot owl and temperature thing in a bit. But, you know, the biggie hit long term, and I don't want to sound like Debbie Downer, from a business standpoint, we're kind of prepping for the worst and hoping for the best. The lake is projected as of last week to be below the natural rim in October. So the bummer there is the river is going to close once it hits 68 degrees for fishing. And then in the fall, once those water temps get cold enough to fish again, we might not even have water. Wow. So it's like, what the heck is going on? You know? So, and we haven't been, it's not like we haven't been through this before. In 16, which was year 4 of the drought, we kind of said, hey, if we can survive this year, we can survive anything. Because in 16, the Truckee was literally closed from the last week of May to mid-September. And for your listeners that, you know, don't know the routine or don't know what a hoot owl closure is a temporary, voluntary river closure, typically in most places when the water temps hit 68 degrees, to where we stop fishing, we leave the trout alone. Montana started this practice decades ago when it was like a once in a lifetime drought. Nowadays, droughts across the West and hoot owls seem to be the norm, which is a bummer. But essentially, once water temps hit 68 degrees, you know, people a lot smarter than me are telling us that when you fight that fish and you're fighting them, pulling them in, they're trying to escape, their lactic acid builds up so much to the point where even if we let them go and they swim away, they can't recover and they get what's called delayed mortality. And they can actually die, even though they swam out of your hands fast, they can die within 24 to 48 hours. So thankfully in 15 and 16, when the river closed, 15, it was only from noon to midnight most of the summer. Again, 16 was bad. The Truckee was not open to fishing at all. Thankfully, 99% of people took the warning and said, hey, I'm going to stop fishing. I'm going to go chase bass or go fish lakes or whatever the options were. And because of that, when the river reopened, our fish were healthy and they survived and they made it. And, you know, there's a lot of very, conservation minded or even, ethically minded anglers out there that, you know, saved our fish. Whether it's from a guide standpoint or recreational standpoint, it doesn't matter. The fish did really well and they made it through the toughest conditions in there, you know, 1 to 7 year lifetime, depending on how old that fish is. And that's kind of what we're looking at this year. So,
and then hoping for a big winter, right?
We are praying for a big winter. Even before that, we were praying for some rain this summer. Tahoe's known for 300 days of sunshine a year. And, it's usually either snowing or sunny.
I didn't realize you guys got rain up there because, you know, where I spend most of my time in the bay, once it stops raining, it's done until it starts snowing again.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, again, we used to not get a lot of rain, but it would happen. You'd get these cool thunderstorms that roll in. I mean, nowadays we don't want thunderstorms because of the fire threat. That's a whole other deal. Right. But we, you know, it wasn't known for rain here, but we would get some, you know. The mountain bikers loved it because it, you know, got rid of the dust on the, you know, the all the mountain bike trails. And the anglers would love it because the water temps would go down for, you know, maybe a week. And on our ponds in Squaw where our school is, like the ponds would fill up a little more. But it's not like we get downpours for like a week at a time. That wasn't what was happening. But like nowadays, we don't even get sprinkles, you know.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to remember how this works in the Bay Area. The rainy season is like October, maybe November until March. And
yeah,
that's when you guys are getting snow. But I didn't realize you got, because when it stops raining in the Bay, it stops, it's done. Mm-hmm. I think it rained once last summer. It was like a surprise thing or late summer.
Before we switch though, real quick. So here's one theory on why maybe we get a little bit more rain.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask.
Or at least we used to. So a lot of people say, again, this used to happen when we'd have snow, right? So the peaks would have snow all summer, right? The ski resorts aren't open, but there'd be snow in the mountains. And a lot of people talk about that moisture being on the entire Eastern Sierra. You'd get like these afternoon thunderstorms that were maybe propelled by evaporation of the snow. The temperature is a little bit different. Again, I'm not a scientist. I don't know what's going on in the real world, but that could be one reason why you guys, it's a light switch. And for us, yeah, every once in a while it used to rain, you know,
that's good. I'm glad to know that because I just thought it's over now until the rains start. But it's good to know that you guys might get a little,
for sure. And, you know, knock on wood, it's not just lightning. There's some rain involved.
A question I love to ask people, and in my experience, I don't think I've seen anything, honestly, but I've heard ducks. But do you ever have any wildlife encounters? I know there's animals up there, but they seem pretty scared.
No, for sure. I would say, so the easy answer is, we absolutely see tons of waterfowl. You know, there's all kinds of ducks and, you know, of course there's the ospreys and the eagles. We have a couple golden eagles around. Bald eagles are pretty common. The goldens are super sweet though. They're huge and you don't see them very often. But in the river you got the mergansers and all that stuff. They're eating fish and crayfish. Although they're mostly out at night, for whatever reason, the joke is COVID brought the beavers out.
Oh, really?
We have never hooked so many sticks with clients nymphing the bottom as we have in the last 12 months. The beavers are just going crazy up here. There's lodges all over the place. There's no dams across the river, but there's lodges. But the beavers are tough. They're usually out at night. We do have otters around, you see on occasion. We just had one show up the other day in our run and the fish just turned off like a light switch, not surprisingly. As far as big game, you know, there's coyotes, there's deer. But the question we by far get the most is, hey, are we going to see a bear today? Tahoe is famous for its black bears. I mean, they're not all black, but genetically they're black bears. They come in cinnamon and brown and black, and there's even a few gold bears. The bummer is, as many as there are here, and they are freaking everywhere, I've seen one bear in 16 years on the river. Wow. The bummer is they at this point are so trained to be in the neighborhoods and in town to eat the garbage and get into cars and just kind of cause a mess everywhere. They are not on the river where they're supposed to be, at least with any numbers, right? They're all around the lake. They're in Truckee, they're in Kings Beach, all the towns, you know, South Lake, Squaw. But, yeah, I will say Floriston and Fairrat are two of the exits down in the canyon that, of course, are very well known and get fished all the time. Although I've not seen a bear down there, there are signs of bears everywhere. So I don't know if they're out at night doing their thing, but big picture, we do not see a lot of bears, which is kind of a bummer. You know, they're pretty harmless. They don't mess with people. You just yell at them and they run away. But it'd be cool to see bears with clients every once in a while. You know, you don't need pepper spray like you do in Alaska or Yellowstone or anything like that.
Yeah. My brother lives, somewhere on the way from Truckee to South Tahoe, and he's got bears in his yard almost every day. And
there you go. Right.
And I'm sure you probably saw the video that was out a couple of weeks ago of the bear going into the convenience store.
Oh, I totally did. Yep.
That wasn't too far away, was it?
No, that was on the North Shore. Yeah. Okay. I want to say that was like Kings Beach or Taos City maybe. So our fly fishing school is at Squaw Creek, which is in Squaw Valley, you know, right next to the famous Olympic Mountain that you were talking about earlier. And oh my gosh, there's so many bears in Squaw. They swim in the pool at the resort, the sliding doors, they'll like walk right in, you know, because the doors open automatically by motion. You know, it's just crazy. They just kind of get into everything. And again, thankfully, they're not dangerous for the most part. You know, nobody's going to mess with a mom and her cubs, of course, but... you know, the joke is they're kind of like big raccoons.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you just mentioned your school. So I'd love to hear more about your guide service school and any other projects you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So big picture, we sell ourselves as a school and outfitter. The outfitter, we've kind of touched on a bit. We run the normal half and full day guide trips all around Lake Tahoe, even Pyramid Lake during that season. A few of our guides transitioned from the Truckee to Pyramid for kind of the fall through spring season. But yeah, full and half day guide trips. Every once in a while, somebody wants to be put in a boat. So we'll row you around, you know, one of the lakes or reservoirs. Our good friends at Tahoe Fly Fishing Outfitters in South Lake manage Sawmill Lake, which is a private 10-acre fishery in town. We're super lucky. They allow us to book it, and we bring clients up there too. But Truckee, Little Truckee, Carson, Pyramid, Nevada side of the Truckee. The Nevada side, we even run some float trips over there, flows permitting. But yeah, we do those all year. They never stop. Obviously, you know, May through September, we're cranking. But you know, the new norm with Truckee, with everyone moving up to their second homes now with COVID, there's a lot more people here year round. Spring and fall used to kind of slow down a bit with tourists and like in town, less traffic. nowadays it's just cranking 24/7. So that's kind of the quick spiel on the outfitter side of it, the guide trips. We are very fortunate since day one to have a great relationship with Resort at Squaw Creek, which if anyone knows Squaw Valley, it's the resort where the golf course is. So, we stock those ponds with rainbows every year, and we run classes every morning and every evening from about mid-May through the fall. Basically, once it starts snowing and the weather turns to crap, we kind of shut the ponds down and close up over there. But a mix of anything from hour and a half class, our 3-hour one is the most popular. It's a mix of hour and a half casting lesson, hour and a half fishing. So that's very like never ever beginner or intermediate friendly. If we get beginners out, or excuse me, intermediate anglers out there, they're not so much like, hey, Matt, teach us how to cast. Like we want to take the cast we have and make it better, right? Which is kind of cool. And then we follow up a formal casting lesson on grass and head down to the pond. You get guided by one of our guys. And so that's a really good like day one intro to the sport. We also have what we call, we kind of sell it as a full day. It depends on how many people are in it. We also have an A to Z school, which is, you know, we do PowerPoints on all of the gear, reel, lines, rods, like why you want this rod and not that one. And what's the best rod for you? And we do presentations on the bugs and, hey, here's the real bug. Here's the fake one. Here's what fly selection is and matching the hatch and the life stages. And we don't do a lot of multi-day schools unless it's specifically requested. And the bummer with that is, you know, again, I mentioned our demographic. People are kind of turn and burn, right? They want to ski in the morning and they want to golf in the afternoon and they want to fish, you know. So we do absolutely do multi-day schools. We've offered those through our friends at Flywater Travel in the past. But those are by special request. You won't see those on our website or anything. Every once in a while, you get a group that'll come up for the week and they're like, hey, we want to do like an A to Z 3-day program. And me and my guys were like, awesome. We don't get to do that very often. Like, let's make it happen, you know? So those ponds are great. You know, you're going to hook your first fish. You might catch some fish on dries. You might catch fish stripping streamers. You might catch fish under an indicator. So teaching is our passion. And our number one booking by far is combining that 3-hour class with a half or a full day on the river. So we kind of joke. It's like going to the driving range first, getting warmed up. And then you head to the river and try your luck in the big leagues, quote unquote. So
that's great.
Teaching is my passion. So it's, you know, I love to guide, I love to be on the water, but you know, taking people from where they are to where they want to be like that, that's what really keeps me going. So,
and I can tell, I think, and maybe we've met in the past, but I feel like I've only met you once and I was walking past one of your guided trips and
I remember.
I could just tell you were into it and it was great.
Thank you. Sorry.
So I waved and kept going because, you know, I stop other guides and talk, but I can tell
you could have stopped and talked, dude,
but I can tell you, I appreciated how like into the experience with the clients you were. So I just kept moving.
I mean, you mentioned a couple other things. You know, what else do I kind of have to talk about? The big thing, like the newest expansion of our business, if you will, you and I touched on it before we hopped on the actual podcast call, but we recently started a new instructional membership called Find Your Cast, and this has been kind of a pipe dream for about 10 years, and we're trying to do something that hasn't really been done before. There's one other person out there doing something similar, but it's actually quite a bit different. But you know, I just get clients telling me all the time, like, Matt, what's the best YouTube channel to go to? Or where can I go learn this online? And it's like, you know, there are a few really good resources out there, but so much of the instructional stuff on YouTube is just such garbage, you know? So I've tried to put together a very neat and like hand it to you in one box kind of platform where we're now teaching people how to fish that maybe can't come to Tahoe and spend a bunch of money, you know, on a 3-day excursion or whatever. You know, obviously it's no surprise the internet has been the future, quote unquote, for a while. And, you know, people are learning how to do everything online. And when COVID hit, you know, we got 2 months of cancellations overnight when stuff really hit the fan early on. And I was like, you know, this is the year I'm going to put this project together. I got a bunch of time off coming up. And we did our first launch at findyourcast.com the last few days of April and the first couple of days of May. So it was a week registration. we kind of had a number in our head that, hey, this is the goal we want for members, and we more than doubled it. So it's kind of a really exciting time to do something different within the instructional world. And yeah, it's been great. Today's Wednesday, so every Wednesday we add new content. So when I get off the phone with you, we have a live Q&A, guide talks we call it, where we're answering all of our members' questions about techniques and the content they saw. And hey, Matt, what's happening in, you know, summer conditions wise? So that's their opportunity to have like a one-on-one, well, it's not really one-on-one, a live chat answering questions, you know, with fishing guides. And we're going to start incorporating all my buddies into this, all my guide friends. And yeah, I don't know. It's a really exciting next step to try to expand past just Truckee, you know? So
very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can folks go to learn more about you and your guide service and keep up to date on social media and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. So the biggies are website, of course, mattheronflyfishing.com. That's got the tab for classes. It's got the tab for packages. It's got the tab for, you know, guide trips. Of course, all of our hosted travel stuff is on there, which we haven't talked about. We're pretty lucky to take clients all over the world, do a bunch of fun places. So that's our kind of bread and butter. That's mattheronflyfishing.com and Truckee and Squaw. And then the new instructional membership, even though registration is closed, right now you can join the wait list. Anyone that signs up to join the wait list, there's no commitment whatsoever. We're sending everyone a free 5-page, guidebook on setting the hook with indicators. So really, useful, short, quick 5-minute read on some tips for fishing with indicators. And that is findyourcast.com. And, you'll get a really good sneak peek to the membership when you look at the website, even though our next registration looks like it's going to be in mid-August. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. It's fun. Fun time to be a fly fisherman, for sure.
Terrific. Well, Matt, Thanks for coming on. And
sure.
Everyone be sure to check him out on those digital platforms. And fingers crossed here on this drought. But otherwise, it sounds like you're having a fun season so far. And
we are.
Tight lines.
Absolutely. You too. And you mentioned, I kind of skipped over it. You mentioned social media, Facebook, Instagram, you know, Matt Heron Fly Fishing, for social media, Instagram, Facebook, and then, Find Your Cast Fly Fishing on Instagram. So, missed that there, but yeah, thank you for having me, dude. I'll chat anytime. I know there's a few other topics we could do more podcasts on, and, appreciate the call. So
perfect. Thanks.
Awesome. All right. Take care.